This is Dr. Diana Wiley, and I am your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. You are in for a treat, because I have a wonderful person, Lori Handler. She's a sex educator, author, and a sex and happiness coach. Yeah, we need sex and happiness. That's a lot of what this show is about. Welcome to this program, Lori Handler. I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you, Diana. What a pleasure to be with you, really.
Well, good. And I was on your show several months ago. I recommend your show. Tell people about your podcast and also about your we'll cover it at the end, too, but about some of what you do. Just tell us a little bit about some of what you do.
Sure. I've had a podcast for about almost 15 years called Sex and Happiness. And I interview everybody about sex and happiness and how the two are connected. Been doing that for a while. I have a best-selling Amazon book, Sex and Happiness, The Tantric Laws of Intimacy. And I'm almost ready to release my new book, Sex and Happiness, Over 60. It only gets better. So, and one other thing, and that's that I am a lead faculty member for ISTA, International School of Temple Arts. And before COVID, I was teaching large groups of people how to be sexual, spiritual, and shamanic all over the world. And hopefully that will start again, but I don't know when. So that's a little bit about what I do.
You've, like a lot of people, you've had to step back and redesign some of these programs. You have your butterfly workshops, and I know you work some with Justin Gottlieb, TantraLoveCoach.com is his website. And
well, Justin's a friend of mine. We don't work together, but yeah.
Oh,
I mean, I have put almost all my programs online. They're almost all on Zoom now. Extraordinary Lovers, Tantra Meets BDSM, and Sex and Happiness Journey, also an apprentice program. Those have all been online since the very beginning of COVID.
And so smart of you, so smart of you. We're going to talk about Tantra and BDSM, and you've got an online program all about that. But our listeners have a treat, because that's what we're going to talk about today. And yes, and so how, Lori, you're such an interesting, complex, open, lovely woman. And how did you first get interested in kink? Because we're going to talk about BDSM and kink, but I want to say that there is a difference between the two, but I'll talk about that after you tell us about.
Yeah, okay.
You know,
I might not even have that. I don't have that distinction. What I'll say is I was teaching Tantra. I've been teaching Tantra for over 20 years, and at least 15 or 18 years ago, an Indian man came to my class in New York City. His name's Om Rupani. And Om became my Tantra student. And he took everything, like every class that I offered through Butterfly Workshop. And at some point, he got interested in, let's call it, the darker side of things. So he started to go to something called Dark Odyssey. And, you know, Diana, that's just not for me. It's not it's not my thing. It's not my groove, whatever. So I would say to him, you know, all right, be careful there. I don't know what you're getting into, but whatever. And we've been great friends over all these years, even when he was a student of mine. Anyway, one day he called me. I'm trying to think. I lived in Arizona already. So somewhere maybe 6-7 years ago, he called me and said, come to New York. I need to give you a session. You should have a session with me. And I said, yeah, why? Like, really? What do I need? And he said to me, no, I have something to show you. I can show you how the same way you teach people eye gazing the same way you teach people to get bliss through touch, through eye gazing, through really big, deep connections before sexual engagement. He said, I can show you the same thing through spanking. And I said to him, you're going to have to show me.
That definitely requires a hands-on experience, doesn't it?
So I flew to New York. I had to go to New York anyway to the New Life Expo. And I usually stay with Om and his partner. So I was staying in their place. And then morning came, you know, I stayed over. And then she went to work. And he got in the shower. He came out of the shower and he said to me, okay, get in the shower. Get yourself, you know, ready. We're going to do a session. And so in the session, he tied me up. He tied me up. He blindfolded me. And then he leaned in, like his face next to my face. And now, mind you, we're not intimate partners. We are not lovers, although we have done orgasmic meditation together for years.
Yeah.
He leaned into me and he said, "I'm not going to hurt you." And then my nervous system relaxed.
Mm-hmm,
and then
mm-hmm.
he started to give me what's called sensation play.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
I don't know everything that he used. I have no idea. He used a little bit of a flogger, but a very light one. He used probably a pinwheel. He used some fur stuff. I was blindfolded, so I don't know exactly what he used. But
mm-hmm.
when he untied me and unblindfolded me, which was about an hour later,
mm-hmm.
I was hot. You know, I was aroused. I was excited. I was titillated. And we did orgasmic meditation after that. We did an OM. And then I got in the cab to go uptown to the New Life Expo, which was, you know, in Midtown. And a friend of mine called me while I was in the cab, and she said, "What happened? What happened?" And I said, mm-hmm. "I feel really grounded. I am sitting on this taxi seat like you can't believe. I am so sunk into the seat." I said, "But I'll tell you something. I wouldn't do that again unless I was going to make love with the person."
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Because it aroused in you some feelings of closeness to him, despite the fact that he was spanking you and doing other sensation play kinds of things. But you probably felt
exactly
a closeness to him.
I did, and I felt very aroused, and I felt mm-hmm. like he wasn't the person that I would want to finish that with.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
So that was my introduction. Really, that was my introduction. Then he called me, I don't know, he called me a couple, 3 years later and said,
mm-hmm.
"We should teach together." And I said, "Oh, really?" And he said, "Yeah, I have a curriculum in mind. I'll send it to you. See if you like it. And let's see what happens."
Mm-hmm.
And we started to teach Tantra meets BDSM. We went on 2 world tours. We've taught all over the world together, and we have had a blast. But the best part is what I took home. So that's where, you know, that's where the things that I think, the juicy things that I think you want to ask me about have to do with when I took what we taught home to my partner, and we started to employ the things that Om and I were giving to people in the courses, because that changed.
Can you spell his name? I want to be sure that I have it right, especially for the show notes. Om.
Yeah, it's spelled Om, just like when you chant Om, O-M.
Yeah.
And it's uh-huh. Rupani, R-U-P-A-N-I, Rupani.
Okay, I got it. So,
yeah.
Lori, I'm aware that there is officially a difference between BDSM and kink, And you said you didn't distinguish them, but here's mine. The two terms are not synonymous. BDSM refers to erotic bondage, discipline, and sadomasochism, and kink is a more general term for sex that's unconventional, for example, consensual non-monogamy. But as I understand it, all BDSM is kinky, but not all kink involves BDSM. Would you agree with that?
I see. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, yeah. But BDSM, and you said something else that made me think about this, because you didn't know him, and he said, "I'm not going to hurt you." And BDSM.
No, I knew him really well, but my fantasy about BDSM was that people were getting paddled and spanked and whipped, and I had been to a conference. I went to a leather conference once where I saw things that I wish I never saw.
Yeah, really.
You know,
but as I understand it, BDSM, it's really about trust. And then when you have trust, when it's prevailing over possible harm, the result can just feel so intense and intimate and ecstatic. And some people call BDSM thrilling and fulfilling beyond sex. And I think that's what you've experienced.
Yes. Well, here's the thing. It doesn't all climax, let's say, in sex. It doesn't all involve a sexual connection. However, when I took it home to my own partner, my sexual connection, and we mixed a little bit of pain with a lot of pleasure, or we mixed a little more pain with a lot of pleasure, everything that we had, which we thought was a 10 on a 1 to 10 scale, became like a 75. Like it just, the meter went whoosh. And my partner, at first, like he wanted to be into it. He wanted to be into BDSM. But for him, it might be easier to be in BDSM with other people, not somebody that he loves so much. And then I said to him, no, I could take more. And he was like questioning me. And I said, no, I could take more. As a matter of fact, it would be even hotter. And so when we had to go through that little dance of, okay, I don't want to hurt you. I never want to hurt you. And then I was saying, no, I want you to hurt me a little bit. And he was like, okay, I'll just hurt you a little bit. So we had to measure that out. It was a process. It took a while, but it heightened everything that we do and every way that we connect sexually, because there was permission. There was a bigger permission field, if you know what I mean.
You know, science is on the side of this. A University of Michigan study found that both pain and pleasure can trigger your brain to release dopamine. And, of course, this is a hormone that gives you a thrilling rush, arousal, and it releases it into your bloodstream. So that's pleasure and pain.
Correct. And that's exactly right. Also, pain makes you focus. Pain makes you focus on the present. Pain makes you forget about your shopping list and any concerns that you have about anything else. Pain is such a deterrent in most cases. Like, most people want to avoid pain at all costs. So when you allow a little pain into your touch sequence, into your connection, it can cause you to almost be at attention, like anticipating with anxiousness, but good anxiousness, the next move and the next move. So it heightens everything.
And the whole business about getting you to focus is important. So many women in particular multitask during sex, and there may be underneath that may be some ambivalence about having sex, but certainly, well, and as I understand it, also women have a bigger corpus callosum, the right and left, separating the right and left hemispheres of the brain. And so maybe we were built that way so that if we had a baby and we're having sex, we can hear the baby cry. But the problem is lots of women don't have babies and they're still multitasking. They're not really, really present. So you're saying a little bit of pain can really help you focus. It narrows the focus.
Right. It actually helps you focus on your pleasure, even though that sounds crazy.
It really
does help you focus on the sensations and the arousal that's happening in your body. And so it just brings you to attention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you got interested in all of this a while ago with the help of your OM friend.
Yes.
But how is kink connected to Tantra? Let's explore that a little bit more.
Well, what he was saying to me in the beginning, and I said, show me, he was saying I could bring pleasure, I could bring bliss. So whatever the chemicals are, I think it's a rush of oxytocin and dopamine combined, but it also could be a DMT release in the brain.
What's DMT? You know, I don't know DMT.
DMT is like almost a hallucinogen, and it's released by the pituitary gland.
Mm.
And, yeah, it's like the natural state of psychedelics that the body can produce by itself, but it can happen during deep orgasm. It's like an experience it's like an experience of visiting the void, you know, like, oh, I'm so deep in orgasm that all of a sudden I'm in outer space.
Yes, yes.
Okay. I know you had that experience. You might just not have called it that or known that that might have been a DMT release.
I did not know that, but I've had that that experience with my husband, and it's a thrilling. I mean, we're both in our 70s and healthy, so it's. And we're very, you know, we're very open-minded and fearless and wanting to experiment. So we've tried some of these things, and I didn't know it was called that, but it is. You do feel it's almost like a surreal experience, like you're on another kind of plane or level.
Right, that's what I'm talking about. So what happens is. In Tantra, there are many things that produce the bliss state, and it's done through breathing techniques. So it's done through doing tantric charging breath. It's done through doing tantric transmutation breath. It's done through eye gazing, like breathing and looking into another's left eye. They're breathing and looking into your left eye, and you're breathing together. And pretty soon, after so much breathing, you have big oxygenation going on in the blood. And you have, all of a sudden, you know, serotonin, dopamine, and oxytocin running through the bloodstream, and you start to feel this bliss state. Well, you can feel the same exact way with somebody spanking you. And, like, that was news to me. I never would have thought that. That's definitely not an assumption that I would have made.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But in our training, we do spanking training, and we spank people. We have put people partner up, and they spank people. We tell them that if they really want to feel it, they need to expose some flesh. You know, like you could spank somebody over a pair of jeans, but it's not the same.
Yeah, right, right.
And then we give them numbers, so they call out. 1 to 10.
Mm-hmm.
1 being too little, 10 being too much. 10 is like stop. And so we have people get the number system so that they can measure how they're doing with somebody, and we tell them that 6, 7, 8 is a sweet spot.
Mm-hmm.
So then we tell people to make, you know, to do it like it's a musical note. you know, like do 2 2 2 2 2 3 3 2 3 2 3 4 4 4 5 5 2 3 5 5 5 5 5 6 6 6 7 8 6 7 8 6 7 7 7 7 8 8. And what happens is, because of all the chemicals flowing in the body, the same chemicals, serotonin, dopamine, oxytocin, the same spanking attention with the focus and attention to numbers and details so that nobody goes off the deep end, people stop, and then we say, you know, Om will call out, who's thinking about their shopping list?
I bet it's, you don't, nobody. Nobody's thinking about their shopping list.
Nobody. They're and they think, can't even talk. They can't, people can't even talk. They're totally blissed out.
They're in an altered state, in an altered state of bliss. But I want to go back. Why should we be gazing into our partner's left eye?
Good question. The left eye, the left side of the body, is the receptive side of the body. The right side of the body is like the transmittal side of the body. In Tantra, the left side is the feminine, the right side is the masculine. So if you look into the left eye, you're accessing the right brain. And so it's a receptive side. It's not the judgmental side. It's not the analytic side. It's not the, you know, it's not the questioning strategic side. So when you're looking in the left side, you're reaching someone on the side that they most likely can receive you.
That makes so much sense. That's, I love it. A little aside here, one thing I know about is that there's a preponderance of architects who are left-handed. I happen to know three of them. One's a relative. But because the right side of the brain includes the ability to access space and understand space and spatial arrangements, and that's what architects have to do. But isn't that interesting that there are more architects that are left-handed?
I can
the right
I,
side
not,
of their brain.
I'm actually not
what?
Surprised. I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised. So this is the same thing. Actually, before I taught Tantra, I used to teach in corporate America. I used to teach executives how to make speeches and do big sales pitches and stuff. And I used to tell them to look into the left eye of all the people in their audience. Like, no matter what, you know. So, I don't know, when you were a kid and when I was a kid, they taught us when you're giving a speech, you look above everyone's head to the clock on the wall or something. No, I tell people, go one by one and look in everybody's left eye. You know already where you're going to look the minute you stand in front of people. And I don't care how big my audience is, I always look into the left eye of my receivers.
That's fascinating, Lori. That's really good advice, and I didn't know about this, so I'm going. One of the things I have loved about doing my program, Love, Lust, and Laughter, for over 10 years now, is that I continually learn new things from my guests, and we both know to age successfully, you have to remain curious, and you want to learn new things, so... you're aging successfully, and I'm aging successfully because we're open-minded. We have fearless attitudes. We're willing to experiment, right? And we remain curious. And so I love it. I love it. And I'm sure you, with your show, your podcast, Sex and Happiness, and you're on Facebook too, and I love reading some of your information about your workshops and all of that.
Thank you. Yeah, to me, you have to break things up. I like to break things up and change things. I don't like to get into too many routines, and when I have a routine, I like to break it up because I don't want to be stuck. I don't want to be rigid. I want to be flowing and bending, and that does keep you youthful. It's you calling it aging gracefully. I call it keeping yourself youthful. Whatever it is, it works. It definitely works.
You know, one of the things that I say in my book, Love in the Time of Corona, is sex is fun, it's free, and it's the fountain of youth. It's the fountain
of
youth.
That's right. I agree. I do agree. That mm-hmm. because it produces all those chemicals, and because we need those chemicals in our brain on a regular basis. So anybody who thinks that when they hit 50, they're supposed to dry up, they're wrong. They're not supposed to dry up, and they're not supposed to stop having sex. No.
That's right. And you can kind of tell when an older person is not remaining sexual. They kind
how,
of...
How can you tell? I'm interested to hear how you can tell, because I could tell also.
Yeah, well, I like to talk about people have folded up their tents. They're just not so interested. And some of them look, especially the ladies, look like dried up apricots. They just, they're not juicy anymore.
Right, and they have like a gray pallor to their face.
Yes.
Like, and I look around the room and I go, not getting laid, getting laid, not getting laid, getting laid.
Well, yes, and you know, I know that I'm never judgmental about this. I just, I'm a real, and have been for almost 35 years, a real cheerleader for sex. I know what a difference. I've seen transformations in the couples that I counsel. I'm doing it currently, of course, but via Zoom. And some such transformations. When people are having good sex past 60, I can hardly wait for your next book, Sex and Happiness Past 60. Is that the title?
Yeah, Sex and Happiness Over 60. It only gets better. And I'm doing two things with that. I'm going to release a book probably within the next 6 months. And then I'm also, starting in April, I'm doing my beta test of the material. So I have a journey that people over 50 can sign up for. And they can come and participate with me at a very low price for me to test the new laws and have them give feedback, et cetera. So they'll be going through an 8-week journey. And it's like I gave 10 laws for my first book, 10 Laws of Intimacy, and they all work great. I've done a bunch of journeys with it. I've sold, you know, loads of books. And now I have 7 new laws that I'll be talking about. And one of the laws is called just what you said. It's a different, I'm saying it differently, but when you said be mm-hmm. curious, one of the laws I have written about is called break things up. Like just
break things up.
You know, mm-hmm. break up with your old self. Break up with everything that you knew, and not break up like get a divorce, although for some people that might be something, but just break the routines, break the patterns, be curious, be open, see what's there that maybe you would have never seen before.
You reveal on your website that in 2009, I don't know if that was the exact year, but you went through your own divorce. And tell us about that, because that was that provided you with a lot of revelations.
Yeah, I didn't actually. I've never been married, so I didn't. I've never had a divorce. In 2003, In 2003, I broke up with my then longest partner, and the partner that I formed Butterfly Workshops with, and mm-hmm. we broke up. And then in 2009, I didn't have any partners from 2003 for quite some time. I mean, I had lovers, but I can't say that I had like a partner, you know, somebody that you know, doing life with, shared values with, et cetera. In 2009, I moved to Arizona and from New York, and I started a whole new life. I mean, I just started an entire new life. That's when I got familiar with super longevity, like how to stay alive longer, how to biohack. That's when I got familiar with, well, I got familiar with the desert. I never, I mean, I'm a New York City girl. It was weird.
Yes. Yeah. What drew you to Arizona?
To learn about life extension, super life extension. I found out about a group of people that were here, and so I started studying with them. I since don't study with them anymore, but I learned a lot, and it turns out that I love living in the desert. So here I am. I'm planted here. And 6 years ago, I met my current partner, who is
Michael.
Like the love of my life. Yeah, Michael.
Yes.
He's the love of my life. He's amazing. And he's 21 years younger than me. And that was an issue at first. And then he got over it. He just broke up for a while, and then he came back and he said to me, you know, I don't really want to live without you. You're like amazing. Mm-hmm. I don't know what I was thinking. And so now we've been together for 6 years.
6 years.
Yeah.
And you do workshops together.
We do. We do Extraordinary Lovers. So we teach people that most people have ordinary ideas about how to relate. And most people fight over things that they don't really want to fight about. They don't even know why they're fighting about it, but they fight. And that most people want to be right rather than come back to love. And so we teach them how to be extraordinary, like how to like go the distance, go beyond, get over being right, and like come back to love every single time. That coming back to love is what it's about. It's what you came together for. You forgot. And so we teach them how to remember, and we give them practices that they do together that help them like get re-enamored with each other.
That is such important work because so many couples have find themselves stuck in a rut and they're kind of bored with each other. And furthermore, they've become more like sister and brother rather than like lovers. They're familiar with each other, but there's no erotic edge. Or interest.
Right.
You're really doing important work. Extraordinary Lovers. It sounds like a great workshop. And now, so this one's online too?
Yes, we do it online. We used to do it in person. We do it online.
Right.
We have one coming up April 24th and 25th, a weekend. And then it has four sessions following up afterwards, and we just teach people to be extraordinary. I mean, we have couples that have been like, I couldn't imagine why they ever got married when I met them, and I thought that one of them was in danger of being murdered by the other one. You know, like people are so mad with each other, they have so much rejection. We think couples are an endangered species, and so we work at that end. We work to have them stop being endangered.
And endangered species, particularly for the midlife and older couples, is that what you're talking about? Is that your target audience?
Well,
or does
no.
it matter the age?
Doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
We've coached much younger people than us. Just like couples who are in trouble. You know, they have like a Disney idea of what it should be like when they're in love. And then they have the reality of nobody ever gave them any skills. You know this because you do the same thing. You know, like no one gave these people any real skills. They taught them geometry. They taught them foreign language. They taught them language arts. They taught them all these things in school, maybe politics and debate team or whatever. But they never taught them anything about human relating. So,
and that is a shame. And if we combine that with coming out of a family where there's insecure attachment, you have a mix that does not lend itself well to real physical intimacy.
Exactly. Exactly. And who didn't come out of insecure attachment? I know you didn't. You're one of the
I know. I was a bit unusual, but I know that I'm rare. I know I'm rare. And I know how fortunate I am. That's not to say that my life growing up wasn't ideal, because the father that was such a wonderful father and such a beautiful husband, I witnessed it with my mother, their affection, their love for each other and for us children. But then he was killed by a truck when I was 14. And that was just shattering. And then many years later, my last husband, before this one, died very suddenly of a heart attack. So that was another, at only 57. So another shattering experience. But I learned a few things from grief. One is, if we can just depart a little bit, because I think it fits to our conversation.
It's fine. I think, yes, please do it.
Yeah. So going back to when I was 14, I remember so well the last morning I saw my father alive. He came into my bedroom. I was brushing my hair, standing in front of the mirror, you know, getting ready for school. And he lifted my hair and kissed the back of my neck and said, "I love you, Diana." And for whatever reason, I didn't say anything back. I don't know why. I mean, I told him before I loved him, because I did so much. And then later that day, life is uncertain, and he was killed instantly by this truck. And so what I learned from that experience was, life is uncertain, and if you care about someone and love someone, you tell them. Well, that lesson helped me a lot when I was grieving for Charlie, because I was fortunate. We had said it all. We had done it all. We had a really good marriage with good communication and good sex. Not as amazing as what I'm having now, but still good. And so studies have shown that the path of grief is actually smoother when you don't have a whole bunch of regrets. Oh, if only we had said, if only we had done.
Right.
So you've got to be open and loving and take chances. And the best way to be really close is to be sexually intimate. It's the glue of a relationship. And so,
I agree.
Yeah, and that's why I love having guests like you talk about, and even some of these alternate, I mean, it's considered a little bit alternate sex, right? BDSM and Tantra, not
yeah,
so much.
It definitely is. Like, there's no, you know, I had a story about, you know, I knew a lot of people who like to get spanked, you know, since I don't know when. And I remember making a story up. Oh, well, these people like to get spanked because they're numb. In their growing up or their coping mechanisms, they've had to numb up. So they're numb, and they like to get spanked because they're numb. Well, that's not right. I made that up. That's a story. And now I see that spanking can bring people enormous joy, enormous bliss, and enormous intimacy, especially in the aftercare section. So I think that what you said about alternative sex can be, you know, kinky, and it can be enlightening, it can be fun, it can be hot and erotic, and it can also be an education into, like, hey, there's more to this than meets the eye.
Yes, there's more to, and now after you mentioned aftercare, and I know how important that is. Could you explain aftercare to our listening audience?
Yeah, and I actually want to explain it, and then I want to say that I think it should be part of all sexual encounter, not just a BDSM encounter. So aftercare means that you have reviewed ahead of time with the person who's submitting, which, by the way, is the person who pretty much says what they want. So no matter what BDSM looks like if you're watching a video or you happen to see it on a porn site or what have you, even if you happen to go to something called a dungeon and you observe BDSM, it may look like somebody is, like, you know, whipping the crap out of someone. They asked for that. The person receiving is the person who says, this is what I want in my scene. This is what I want. And the scene is just like an acting scene. It's over in a matter of time. Like, it has a prescribed amount of time, and it has action that people have agreed to. And then, of course, a very good dom, somebody who's delivering the action, will use some imagination and use some intuition. However, the person receiving usually is the person who says, I want to experience this. Afterwards, they have also agreed to a plan of action for coming down from the endorphins. So that could look anything like holding someone and cuddling them. It could look like leaving them alone and bringing them a glass of water. That's all they want. Some people I know have these things called heavy blankets. Like, they're something you can buy online. They're very heavy. People that I know they keep heavy blankets because when somebody has gone through a scene, what they want to be is wrapped up in a heavy blanket. So aftercare could look like taking somebody's face and stroking their cheek and saying, you're so wonderful. Thank you so much. Wow. You know, you're so great. Whatever they say they want to help them integrate and release the endorphin, that's what aftercare is. And so I like aftercare for every lovemaking. I mean, I think aftercare, like cuddling and maybe saying, you know, what was good for you this time? What really worked? What was, you know, like that. I feel like that's aftercare. Being able to speak about it. I'm a person that likes to speak about everything. So,
well,
anyway, that's what it is. Yeah.
I am too, and I think it's so important because there is for many couples, there's a lot of missed communication. The message sent is not the message received. So, but the specifics for a couple to talk about beforehand, I want to experience this. And by the way, consent is in all of this, of course. Consent.
Right. Right.
Clear consent. And I like the idea of a heavy blanket. I hadn't heard that suggestion before. But stroking the face, that's a very intimate action. Because, you know, if you watch a mother and a baby, often she's stroking the baby's face and just loving and, kissing those little chubby cheeks. I'm remembering my own two children when they were little. I love kissing their little chubby cheeks. stroking the face and making the eye contact, left eye, now I know from you. It's intimate, you know, break that word down. Into me, you see.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
So that's what aftercare is. Aftercare is providing somebody with the exact amount of intimacy or the exact amount of space or, you know, the exact amount of whatever kind of attention they feel like they would need at the end. And I've taken that from BDSM and said, let's do that with all lovemaking. Let's not just make love, be done with it, roll over, go to sleep. Let's not make love, be done with it, turn on the TV, smoke a cigarette. You know, the old days, people would smoke a cigarette. Like, not that. Let's have some aftercare with every intimate encounter or with most intimate encounters so that we can feel that intimacy. We can just reinforce it as an integration.
I like that word, integration. I remember the old joke about the question, do you smoke after sex? Answer, geez, I don't know. I haven't looked. But we should be smoking after sex in terms of how we feel. It feels so good. and actually, if somebody is in a new relationship, a new sexual relationship, the other person's behavior post-coitally can be very revealing. Yes. if the guy gets up and immediately goes to the bathroom and then leaves or doesn't cuddle or doesn't do any of those things.
Yeah.
Those are some warnings. Now, we were going to talk about warnings. Let's talk about more of what are some things to look out for, some things when we're combining BDSM and kink. What are some of the warnings?
When you're going into practices that involve sensation play, that involve more of a heavy touch, things mm-hmm. that involve instrument. The reason we train people, let me just backtrack for a minute. The reason we train people first on spanking is because you get feedback with your hand.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very fashionable since the movie 50 Shades of Grey.
Yep.
It's very fashionable for people to go out and buy all these things. You know,
the accoutrements of
kink, like they buy floggers and horse crops and pinwheels and other devices. They buy things. But here's the thing. We say, Om and I both say, if you don't know what this feels like on your own body, do not use it on somebody else's body. Number one. Number two,
that's
if you don't know what their numbers are.
That's a very powerful suggestion. So if you don't know how it feels in your own body, for heaven's sakes, don't use it on somebody else's body.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Second of all, if you don't know what the number system and you don't know how to get real feedback from somebody, then you shouldn't be using these things or even your hands on somebody. You need to find out what their scale is, not what you think, not what you assume. Also, if somebody is a maybe, that's not a yes. Maybe.
Okay, that's good, maybe right? A maybe is not a yes.
Maybe is no until it's a yes.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something to be manipulated. Maybe means, in my world, maybe means no. Like, if someone says maybe, I'm not going there. I wouldn't go there with them. They have to be a hell yes. So things to watch out for are people who just pick up tools and say, you know, let's get together. I'm going to flog you. Well, no, you're not. You're not going to flog me unless I want to be flogged. You
right.
are not going to flog me unless you know my sensitivity. I'm not going to enter into that with you. So things to watch out for are people who don't negotiate fully the things they want and the things that you, whoever you are willing to offer, or vice versa. You
mm-hmm.
say what you want and the person doesn't want to do what you want. Well, you don't have a match. You have to have safe words. And you can't, you know, there's something called pickup. Like there's a pickup game. It's kind of like a pickup game of basketball. Like you could go to a dungeon and do a pickup game of BDSM. If you don't know this person really well, you should spend a little time getting to know them and negotiating out like who they are and what their vision is. This isn't a place for you to unleash anger.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't a place, you know, there are like warning signs, you know, like I would say to people, if someone wants to be a dom and dominate
mm-hmm.
the scene and they're very angry, they have a lot of anger to unleash, that's not a safe person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, not a safe person at all. That's why it's...
Hello.
The obvious thing is... Can you hear me?
I can.
You can't hear?
No, I can. I can hear you.
Oh.
I can hear you fine.
Okay, good. Good. Yeah, you've got to know the person, and you've got to have these conversations. I mean, there have been some studies about Well, let's see. I'm getting my hands on one right now. This was Psychological Characteristics of BDSM Practitioners, and this was produced in the Journal of Sexual Medicine in 2013, and the conclusion was, we conclude that BDSM may be thought of as a recreational leisure rather than an expression of psychopathological processes. And that, yeah, and that it turns out, if you read the whole study, that the people that practice it well are very healthy and communicate extremely well. They have these discussions before they engage in all of these things. So essential. And wouldn't all couples do so much better, even ones not wanting to necessarily practice BDSM, but all couples, to talk about what they want and need. Now, I do have, just to mention my book again, Love in the Time of Corona, I have a sex menu exercise there, some 44 different sexual activities that go from very vanilla to sort of more kinky. And we have yes, no, maybe, and giver or receiver. I think what you said about the maybe is illuminating for me. But anyway, I've had couples do this, and it, by the way, it is a free download from DearDrDiana.com, my website. But I've had couples do this, and for the first time ever, they're talking about what they want sexually or what they don't want. So sometimes having a scale like this, a menu like this is really the sex menu, can help couples find the words and talk about things that they've never talked about before. It's essential.
That's key. Communication is key to all of it.
It is.
And if BDSM opens up more communication, so be it. It's great. I think it does.
I think it does, too. And, of course, it may be a little frightening for some people to experiment with it. So what if somebody is thinking about it, but what they should take your course, but let's talk about some things they should do besides taking your course. But let's talk about taking your course in this.
I think they should take the course.
Yeah,
I think they should take the course because it's for beginners. And we've had very skilled people in the course too, but people learn from each other. You know, there's something about groups that make people take more risks than they would on their own. Like just being in a group, there's always people who move, you know, who will move a little faster and some who will move a little slower, but people would move more slowly if they were just by themselves than when they're in a group. So when they're in a group, they get to see a whole bunch of other people. They get to hear other people's questions and they get to make it a little bit more normalized. Like it's not a bunch of freaks. There are normal people like you and me in the class, and they want to study because they want to make more heat in their relating. That's all. They want to see what else there is. So it's it's a safe place. It's affordable. It's per couple, and there's usually about, you know, there's anywhere from 20 to 30 couples online. So you get a cross section. You get kind of a cross section of society. There's lots of different kinds of people and lots of ages. So
That's fascinating. And so they're actually participating in some of these things. So
And they can leave the camera on or they can turn the cameras off, whatever. If they need more privacy.
Yeah, but then they can still have the audio.
Exactly. So we allow them to do that. And when we're together and able to be together live, not online, we just have a great time. We usually have about 40 people, and we teach them a skill, and then we have them break out. And they don't have to be couples. And when we're live, it could be couples or singles. And we have the people who want to dominate, get in a line and face away. And then we have the people who want to be submissive. We have them choose who they want to dom them. So they can change, you know, they can change partners for each exercise if they want. And they can also do that if they're there with couples. Sometimes couples are so hard on each other. I'm just going to say this. Sometimes couples are so critical and so difficult with each other that it behooves them to work with somebody else in class, get the skill down before your partner is the one criticizing you and telling you you didn't do it right. So,
wow. Yes.
Yes.
That makes sense. That makes sense.
Couples sometimes are very difficult to work with, especially when they're into putting each other down. Like, we don't encourage that at all. We don't like it, but sometimes they do it because that's the way they relate to each other, and we have to say, okay, cut that out. You know, you're here to learn. Your partner isn't here to get it perfect the first time. Your partner is here to learn, and you're not allowing them to learn. You're cutting them, and we don't allow that. We don't allow them to cut each other down.
So then the couples may have a brand new experience where the inner critic, I think I'm hearing the music. All right.
Yep.
That means that we have come to the end of the program. Lori, I hope you'll want to come back maybe in a few months because
I would love
when you can do the workshops live.
I would love to. Can I give my website?
Great. Well, I'm sorry, say again?
LoriHandlers.com.
Yeah, LoriHandlers.com. I'm going to put everything in the show notes. And
wonderful.
Thank you so much. You've been a fascinating, informative, wonderful guest. I'm so appreciative, really, Lori. Thank you, Diana.
You're so
welcome.
Much. Thank you for having me. And I loved every minute of it. Thank you.
You're welcome. I loved every minute of it, too. We just have a little love fest going on here. It's
wonderful.
A good thing, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay. Goodbye, everybody.
Thank
Hope
you.
This program
Bye,
was
everybody.
Helpful. Bye-bye. Ti divertirai, che traguardi vuoi farmi?